London dropped its dignity.
Yeah.
So has France and Germany.
Yeah.
All hands are dancing to a raggedy melody full of originality.
Sing it, though.
Hello and welcome to the first Yesterday's Chip Paper of 2018. We welcome back. We hope you all had a wonderful festive season. We are a fortnightly, in case you haven't listened before, in which case my welcome back was redundant.
welcome anyway.
Welcome. We still like you.
Stop turning away listeners, jeez.
We are a fortnightly or thereabouts podcast that looks at stories from historical newspapers. My name is Jim.
And I am Violet, and I live in London, and Jim is generally in New York, though he's taken a slight detour this week for...
I have.
For Christmas.
I'm in sunny North London.
Is it snowing there?
It's not snowing, but it is nighttime.
I say there because I am actually ironically not in London for the London recording. I'm down in Brighton where it doesn't snow.
So now that you've got my full travel itinerary, what we do is... We get together every couple of weeks and we tell each other stories that we find in old newspapers. And this week is the turn of Violet to tell a story.
It is. And so towards the end of 2017, we started releasing these shorter episodes, which we call our extra episodes, where we pull out snippet stories that we find often around the edges of the main feature that we're researching for that week for these regular episodes. And what I've discovered through those... is that I've got quite a fondness for stories about men just beating each other senseless, especially yes. when they're articulated in some sort of food fetish vocabulary.
In what, sorry?
It will involve a lot of punching each other in the breadbasket.
We do like pugilists.
Essentially, as this starts as the story of one of those fighters, you won't even recognize the intro by the end because it just... changes so drastically, and I'm not going to say too much because I don't want to spoil it, but the man is just like a god.
I think you've built this up a bit too much.
Anyway, this is Albert Shakespeare's story.
Shakespeare.
We're getting straight into it with the Motherwell Times on the 22nd of November 1912. Albert was born at Hull in 1875, and I did look, and records suggest that it was actually 1873, but we'll go with 1875 because that's what was recorded.
But as we've said before, everything before 1994 is just made up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He was the offspring of poor parents who sent him to school barefooted and often hungry.
God. Where was this?
Hull.
Good
old Hull.
Yeah. It features a lot. It's kind of like our Florida. It sounds like it features a lot in these stories.
One American paper, the Mason Republican from Missouri, said that his mother was a tramp and his father was a blackguard, and that he was born in a coal house near a stable. But back to the times. To appease his hunger, he would steal the other children's dinners, and upon being punished, he ran away from school. Hiding from the school officers and driven by the pangs of hunger, he continued to steal, and thus commenced a life of wrongdoing. Running away from Hull, he was sent to the north, where he lived the life of a street Arab, earning money by carrying parcels, selling matches, black shoes, etc.
Can I just pause you?
You may.
The life of a what?
A street Arab.
A street Arab is what you said.
Which is a recurring theme throughout this.
Good.
I'm sure it came all from the same racist dispatch, so...
okay, great.
Here he became acquainted with a gang of desperate hooligans, who, for a time, were the terror of the police. They add here, blasphemer, gambler, fighter though he was, yet there were still some good traits in his nature. He never touched intoxicants or smoked, though he often spent whole days in public houses.
Blaspheming isn't necessarily up there with the other things.
Gambling and fighting.
Yeah, he's gone to the place where you gamble, fight, blaspheme and drink.
To what? Who knows?
Yeah.
Here I turn to Trove for the Australian Star to continue the story.
This guy's made, the news made it to Australia.
Oh yeah, he's all over the world. Don't you worry about that.
Albert Shakespeare.
In a physical sense, Shakespeare's rough-and-tumble life made a man of him, forced as an Arab, there we go again, to forage far and wide for food, exposed to all weathers, for yet his teens were reached, subjected while yet a boy to the hard and vigorous training of a pugilist by two brutal Durham miners who exploited...
You make him sound like a Sherpa.
I was thinking, actually, the way it was narrated, it sounded a little bit like a, what's the Famous Five? A bit like an Enid Blyton novel, but...
Enid Blyton. I was thinking more like the training montage from Rocky.
Oh, yeah.
In the snow.
Oh, wait, is that the theme? No, it's not. Never mind.
This is great radio.
Who exploited him for their own gain in Saturday afternoon steak fights, and who licked him when he lost.
You know, no one else can see the inverted, the sort of air quotes that you're doing.
I should just explain here, that means they beat him up. It's not like some cute, cuddly cat thing going on.
Yeah, these miners aren't licking boys for substance.
He became a perfect Hercules. He varied his open pugilism with more questionable, but still professional, employment of breaking up political meetings. He also worked as what they termed a chucker out at a music hall.
There's a bouncer.
He can lift a burly, filey fisherman above his head with one hand and can break a penny in two between his fingers.
No, he can't. I also, for anybody who hasn't been, Filey as a place in Yorkshire. I think it's Yorkshire. It's on the East Coast. It's not, he isn't like super into files.
Unfortunately, I couldn't actually find any reports of his pugilist days in the papers.
Right.
But I mean, I'm sure it consisted of a lot of knobbing and dibbling of men's clay.
I'm sure there was some knobbing, but the fact that every article mentions that he was a pugilist suggests to me that he was quite good at it.
Oh yeah, he was. The Macon Republican described his sporting career as performing on stage at Hull, England, lifting up weights, tumbling, and doing things of that sort.
That sounds terrible. That's not fighting at all. That's just burly gymnastics.
What's a real shame is that all I really have of his life pre-1906, so this would be the first 30 years of his life,
right,
is later reports giving an account of his earlier life.
Do you know who that's very reminiscent of?
Who?
Our Lord Jesus Christ. Have we checked that this isn't, in fact, the Bible?
Spoiler!
Yeah.
And it's a shame because it's later reported that as well as being a stellar pugilist, he had saved at least 20 people from, and I quote, violent death by the age of 29. What? Some papers say closer to 30 people. And oh. I'm sure there must have been reports of these in the papers at the time that they occurred, but I couldn't find any.
Are we just saying, what do you mean? Like,
so
in battle?
No. Well, I mean, I'm going to go more into it in a minute with the later reports, but I mean, I tried searching for dates and areas where these big events apparently happened, where he saved all of these lives, and I just couldn't find anything.
Would it be a huge spoiler if I was to throw in now that he lied?
It could be, but there, I mean, see, there's a lot of abstract rumor, but apparently he was this revered hero who just kept winning medals for bravery.
Who's giving out medals for, like, who awards those?
He had about 8 medals from the Royal Humane Society.
Right. In one of our mini episodes, they gave a Royal Humane Society medal to somebody who killed a bear.
Yeah, I mean, it's not hard to win those, is it?
No.
You are a human? Oh, good. Take one
you
of these.
You have a mane. This just goes together
very
perfectly.
Very impressive hair, this guy.
Yeah.
So this is the Hull Daily Mail in a much later report on the 11th of April, 1949.
Wow.
It was in Sunderland that he saved his first life. A friend was in danger of drowning, but Shakespeare dragged him to safety. At Roker, not long after, he saved 2 more people from drowning. Later, he returned to his hometown, where he settled down as a hackney carriage driver. It was while near Barnston Drain that he saw a little girl fall into the water, and he dived in and saved her. And I feel like at this point, maybe someone should have said to him, look, I know, like, the medals, they're great and everything, but it doesn't really count if you push them in.
Yeah. It's also a little bit like watching an episode of Murder, She Wrote. And it's like, do you know what? I would just probably stop inviting her around. Everywhere she goes, someone dies. Everywhere this guy goes, someone nearly drowns. Also, we don't know what his averages are like. For every one that he's saving, he could be just letting 4 drown.
Wandering past another one, like, I already did one this morning. Fill in my quota, guys. Shakespeare also met his wife in unusual circumstances.
Yeah, but
he had driven a party from Hull to Old Brassens on August 16th, 1897, and while on the cliffs, heard screams for help. Racing down to the beach, he saw Miss Florence Hull of Poplar, Greater Hull, and Miss Adamson of Gibson Street, Hull, cut off by the tide. When he got to them, they were in 3 feet of water and sinking in the sand. He rescued them both and later married Miss Hull.
Right. 3 feet isn't that much.
No, but heavy dress, I guess.
Fair point.
Two heavy dresses made heavier by water.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop justifying this guy's rescue to you.
I'm a little over 6 foot, and it really is the worst bit of getting into cold water when it sort of hits your midriff.
So yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And the rescues don't stop there. Bam. 3 years later, he saved two other girls from drowning at Hull. 18 months after that, he rescued a child from a burning house. And that was actually the only report that I could find from the actual time of these rescues. It was this one sentence from the Hull Daily Mail on the 5th of May 1903 that said, "John Simpson and Arthur Shakespeare, who behaved so gallantly at the Michael Street fire, in which two children were fatally burned, have been invited by the management to the palace tonight, where a collection will be taken on their behalf." Which received this much longer response 3 days later. To the editor of the Daily Mail, "Sir, seeing the letter in your paper signed by Mr. Wilkinson, I wish to let him know, and also the public, that I have not received any benefit from the Palace Theatre or any other place on my own behalf, but I have taken up collections by kind permission of Mr. Perry of the Alhambra and Councillor Sage of the Empire on behalf of the distressed father and mother to replace their wrecked home, for which I have already collected £9. With respect to the rescue of the children, I think Mr. Simpson, the neighbours, and Sergeant Grindle will bear up this statement that I rendered great help in rescuing the children, and that I did not stay behind to have my name taken by the police as a hero, but went with all speed to the infirmary with the dying boy, and I also had my coat ruined and my fingers burned. I am, sir, etc., Albert Shakespeare, 68 Great Thornton Street, Hull, May 7th, 1903. Witness, John Simpson, another rescuer, 5 Providence Place, Porter Street."
That is pretty shitty about his coat.
Yeah, I do like how he tries to clear up this message about who the collection is for, and is then like, yeah, I mean, I know two kids are dead, but man, my coat is ruined. It's just like... kids.
My coat.
Perspective.
My fingers also.
Fingers? You know, a little achy this morning.
Achy?
After burn, you know, the throbbing.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Don't anybody check whether that's true.
Further reports of his rescues included diving under 2 barges to the aid of a drowning boy in Hull docks, being impaled on a spike in the keel of one of the boats, yet fetching the lad up safely.
I mean... I don't want to pour scorn on this guy because he sounds pretty terrific, but this is a little suspect.
"And making 3 gallant attempts to swim out from Withersea through the breakers to the drowning crew of a Norwegian vessel and later lending valuable life service."
He's... okay, fine.
So, as I mentioned, the stories only really start appearing around 1906 when he's around 31. And this is because 2 years earlier in 1904... an extraordinary event occurred that would change his life forever. It's 1904.
Yeah.
Albert Shakespeare is 29.
He is.
He's a possibly well-known fighter. He's got this fighting school in Hull.
Oh, has he?
Yep. He set that one up. And he's still running around saving people all the time.
Pretty great guy.
And I actually find this next report quite funny because... he saved all these people, and you're reading these reports, and you're thinking that this guy, wow, like, he's a hero, and...
he is?
He is.
He has medals.
He
has medals.
He has human medals.
How many human main medals have you got?
None.
I have not saved anybody in weeks.
And, I mean, to a certain extent, he is this hero, but he's also this showman... because his main, like his, the way he makes money is being a pugilist, and that comes with a certain amount of attitude. It turns out,
it has to.
And
well, it has
sometimes...
to. Nobody wants to be punched in the face repeatedly.
by someone who's like, oh, sorry.
Yeah, it just takes, I don't think, yeah, I think it takes a certain kind of person to go into a ring and get beaten up or whatever for round after round.
Yeah.
And also the concussion can't help.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah.
It's like Rocky all over again, as you say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was Kid Rocky Jesus. Rocky Christ.
Rocky Christ. That's the title of this episode.
Yeah.
So as you'll hear in this report from the Pontypool Free Press on the 7th of December 1906, he could be a bit of a prick.
Ooh, is that the headline?
That's what it says.
The Welsh don't mess around.
It was on the 9th of November that Shakespeare won the Cakewalk Championship of Yorkshire at the Alhambra Music Hall, and when coming out, he heard singing, and seeing the Salvation Army, he had once thirsted for a row.
Ooh.
Walking up to the leading man, who was Mr. Albert Harrison, he, Shakespeare, intended to at once knock him down, but his hands were firmly held. After doing the cakewalk in front of the army, he was at last induced to enter the chapel, where they were holding the mission. Entering the building, he got into one of the seats, intending to have a row, and turning one man out of his seat, he took off his coat, rolled it up for a pillow, and lay full length there.
That's a power move.
I think that was actually a cut scene from Rocky, because they were like, nah, this wouldn't happen in real life. What, he walked into
a church? That is a power move. Also, you can't go around punching the Salvation Army.
Yeah, it's not cool. It's also not the first thing I think of when I see the Salvation Army. It amused me that it was.
I don't know, the bells are kind of annoying.
Being offered a hymn book, Shakespeare tore it up and threw it at the donor.
No.
Later, the wife of the missioner, Harrison, went up to Shakespeare and, after some earnest entreaties, which were met with scorn, asked if he, Shakespeare, would shake hands with her. Looking at his pals, he gave them to understand that he was going to make the woman scream, and with this intention, he held out his hand. Immediately, the hands met. Albert Shakespeare's fell at his side, as if paralysed. It was arranged that he should fight a black man on the following Wednesday.
Oh, good, good you included that detail.
Yeah, the inherent racism, which, so prominent.
Hmm.
And he went to the spot to meet his man, but even then his arm had not regained its power. Notwithstanding...
This old lady give him a stroke.
That's her secret power.
She's old lady kryptonite for this guy.
Notwithstanding this, he was confident of success with only the one hand, and faced his man in that condition. To his consternation, as soon as he raised his other hand to strike his opponent, that also fell at his side, and he had to forego the fight. At his home, the power returned to his arms, and he at once went to retrace his steps, in order that he should have the fight out. But this time, the use departed from his legs, and Shakespeare had to drop where he was in the street, cursing the people who gathered around him. He decided to go to the mission, which was then being conducted in Great Thornton Street Chapel, and at once his energy was restored.
Hang on, how did he get there?
Well, this is what I was wondering.
Do you know what, Violet? Just as a sidebar here, this sounds like bullshit.
Does it?
Unless this old lady is A witch.
Uh-huh.
B, a witch. And C, a taxi service. I don't see how he's getting around.
D, a lady of God.
Yeah, fair enough. Jesus Balboa and
just,
his lady.
Just put that one out there.
Fair enough. God's conduit, I understand.
The meeting was about to be concluded that Mrs. Harrison, the wife of the missioner, told her husband not to conclude the proceedings as she was sure they would convert Shakey that night. And only a few minutes afterwards, Shakespeare rushed into the chapel and in his haste knocked down several people on the way to the communion rail, where he knelt penitently.
He's such a dickhead.
From that time, Albert Shakespeare was a different man.
What about all the people he knocked down? Their church-going experience.
Don't worry, guys. I am saved.
I've got an appointment with Jesus.
So on the 6th of November 1906, at the age of 31... Albert Shakespeare begins his career as one of the most popular evangelists of the North.
Oh, really?
And there are loads of these reports from all over the UK just documenting wherever he's visiting, because he was basically a bit of a celebrity as a sportsman, and this incredible story just captures everyone's imaginations.
Yeah,
and
course.
The story of this horrific character, and he's getting this second life. And from that point, it went from finding nothing on him to finding... almost too much on him, because They had adverts in all the papers. They had
Oh, really?
the same story repeated in several papers. But it was great. Like, there was so much after that point.
And do we know what kind of, was he like a fire and brimstone guy? Are there any of his sermons?
I don't have a record of any of his actual words.
Also, just this is a weird piece of, I made a Jesus joke at the start of this episode, and now he's a preacher.
Yeah. Is it because, though, I said he was like a god? Because that might have been semi-intentional.
No, I think the Lord works in mysterious ways. Well,
maybe this podcast needs to take a different angle.
No, it doesn't.
No. Actually, I lie. I did find a couple of lines from his sermons, but he was just saying, he was telling his life story. He didn't really preach. He just talked about himself a lot.
And then I punched Satan in his face.
But I do have a report on one of his sermons, which says, when Mr. Albert Shakespeare, it's funny you should say that, when Mr. Albert Shakespeare entered the pulpit at the Abbeydale Primitive Methodist Church this evening, he immediately began to strip. Off came his coat and his collar and tie. Then he stopped and explained. I feel like
he stopped
before.
Turned to the crowd and he sort of saucily undid a button and everyone's like, hey! And then he like wagged his finger like, no.
You have to explain that shit before you start the stripping.
Yeah.
Then he stopped and explained, he is a converted pugilist or something of that sort, and lest any of the people in the crowded congregation should be nervous, he told them that he had no intention of punching anybody.
Unless you cross me. I'll punch you.
Unless you try to get to this pulpit before me.
Yeah, unless you leave to go to the toilet while I'm talking, I'll punch you. Oh, I'll punch you.
He stripped so that he could throw himself into his preaching with more freedom.
Right. I mean, that I couldn't do that at work.
What, strip?
I couldn't be like, listen, I'm just going to get naked because I need more freedom.
I feel like...
exercise syntax better.
I need to type with more freedom.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, of course, he gets these huge crowds... And the newspaper reports quite often contain the number of people he's converted while he's been there. So it's like a kind of running total. They're still reporting on him.
The number that he's converted.
Yeah.
Right.
And how you weigh that up, who knows? I guess they're just presuming that everyone has gone, has left with God.
I guess they have to. I mean, and also, I don't think atheism is particularly fashionable. I think probably everybody had some form of belief in God. I suppose this is conversion to evangelism.
I guess so, yeah. I have no idea how they would actually evaluate it.
It sounds like a real buzzkill of an event, to be
honest. It is so funny, though, because I hadn't thought of this before, but they are reporting on him as if he is a sports star still. They're like, yeah he's hit 30,000 souls. And I don't mean hit, I mean, like, converted.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's just jazzed up on God, I guess. God, it sounds boring.
So in 1912, the Motherwell Times reported that in his first 7 years of service, he converted over 30,000 souls.
I don't believe it. Wait, what? 30,000?
30,000.
Converted.
Converted.
He's posting pretty good numbers then.
Yeah, pretty strong performance.
Although I don't know what that is in relation to...
other preachers? Yeah. I have no way of assessing that.
Like, a 20-goal-a-season striker is good in the Premier League, but I don't know what that's like in, like, the MLS or something. I just don't know what the figures are like.
He was well known for preaching in his shirt sleeves, and I did find one great headline alongside his photo in the Sheffield Daily Telegraph. I think I've already put it online that said,
"You did
the preacher who strips."
You did, and I was very confused by it at the time, but I'm less confused now, so thank you.
So Shakespeare became an evangelist in November 1906. He spent the first few weeks just travelling around and telling his story of conversion. And then, from the Hull Daily Mail, 14th of January 1907... the headline runs, Great Beverly Blaze, Disastrous Mill Fire, Hull Evangelist and Others Injured, A Gallant Action.
Again.
For 2.5 hours, there has been raging a terrific fire at Grove Hill to the east of Beverly. The huge flour rolling mill of Messrs. Craythorne and Sons Limited is ablaze, and there is no possibility that the greater portion of the great block facing Barmston Drain, including the high mill tower, can be saved, despite the copious streams of water that are being poured upon it from all sides. So the mill is on fire, and the police and the fire brigade and scores of volunteers are there trying to get it under control. And the mail continues, "It was while work of this kind was being carried on that a serious accident occurred. Two gallant fellows named Wilson and Porter had mounted a ladder reared against one portion of the building three stories high. All went well till flames were seen to leap from a window halfway down the ladder. The result of this was inevitable. Nothing could avert it. The flames licked around the ladder, burnt it in two, and the men upon it fell to the ground. One of the men, Wilson, was at the top of the ladder. Among the crowd was Mr. Albert Shakespeare, the converted Hull athlete, who during the week has been conducting a mission in Wednesday Market Primitive Methodist Chapel, Beverly. Only two nights ago, Mr. Shakespeare, as described in another part of the Hull Times today, was in the pulpit expressing how the medals he wore on his breast as he addressed the meeting had been given to him, not for wrestling or boxing, for saving life from drowning and from fire.
It's pretty lame that he wears them out and about.
Mr. Shakespeare was near the foot of the ladder. He saw what must happen, and he knew that if the man fell from the height of the third story, he would be smashed. There was nothing else for it. The man must be caught, and Mr. Shakespeare must catch him. He caught him and saved his life, so all the people who saw the gallant deed declare. But there was a sad sequel. The shock to the evangelist was severe. By and by, a mournful procession wended its way to the cottage hospital. One of the men lay unconscious on a stretcher. The other two, including Mr. Shakespeare, were on a cart, unable to move.
Uh-oh.
The Leeds Mercury reported that he laid for several weeks in the hospital, and later, experts who examined him at Manchester and elsewhere said that his liver had been split.
Oh, wait.
And that in healing, a clot of blood had formed, which caused paralysis of his lower limbs. For months, he had been a pathetic figure, slowly trailing himself along on crutches.
That sounds like, right, okay, I'm right.
Right.
I'm right now Googling, can you split your liver?
What happens if you split
your...
Oh, I don't want to know the images that you're coming up with now.
You can?
Oh, really?
The liver is the only organ in the body that can regenerate.
Oh.
If you split the liver into two pieces, these pieces can regenerate and the size of the liver goes back to normal. This is a
very
unique
organ.
I don't know.
No, but I need to know for the rest of this story because this may...
Oh, wow. God, you can do two-for-one transplants that let patients split a liver. Because this sounds...
That sounds like a weird Poundland deal.
That's on NBC News. It sounds like the doctor was like just new, like a trainee. And they were like, oh, how long is he going to be in for? And he's like, oh, a while. What's he done? Oh, split liver? Split his liver. Yeah.
But how long does
is
it
that
take?
Possible from...
How long does it take to repair?
I don't know.
You've got Google open, don't you? I'm not asking
we
you.
We both just found out that this was possible. Let's say a few weeks.
Okay.
Does that help the story?
Okay, yeah, that helps right, the story. Good. Thanks.
Good. How would a split liver render his motor skills?
The paralysis of his lower limbs.
She sounds like... It sounds like he compressed a disc or something like that.
His liver split, and while that was healing, a clot formed that caused the paralysis.
Oh.
Is what's reported.
Well, okay. I'm now...
Dr. Jim, what do you think?
How long has he got? I'm on the side that this was an actual medical professional diagnosis, and I'm just an idiot.
But during a Methodist gathering at MoCop, something remarkable happened. Shakespeare turned up...
All right, okay. I can see what's coming.
Oh, yeah, sure,
doctor,
you get.
After all, yeah.
Shakespeare turned up on his crutches and asked for prayers of healing so that he may return to his work. And then, going back to the Mercury, Mr. Albert Shakespeare of Filey, a prominent primitive Methodist evangelist known throughout Yorkshire as the converted athlete, who holds many medals for life-saving and who received serious internal injuries when gallantly effecting rescues from a Driffield fire in the early parts of the present year, is reported to have been miraculously cured of partial paralysis in answer to prayers offered up for him at the Great Centenary Conference of Primitive Methodists at MoCop. And that's the longest sentence I think I've ever had to read out on this show.
Yeah, you didn't even breathe either. That's impressive.
He threw his crutches away last Monday, declared he was cured, walked to the railway station, and, says our Filey correspondent, is still able to dispense with their aid, being, in his own words, permanently cured.
Bullshit. I think.
You know what else
stinks.
Is bullshit? That was two sentences, that entire story. Someone's got to work on their punctuation.
Yeah. You tell him.
I'll find him. Don't you worry.
That's just also convenient. All of that is so convenient. And I know that people are going to be listening to this and being like, Jim, this isn't a hot take. It's really obvious what's going on. But I've just found out that you can repair a liver. So I'm still reeling.
This podcast never fails to amaze.
Yeah, I'm not ready to take on new information right now. So this didn't happen. I mean, it happened. But he went in there walking. He went in there able to walk.
You are a skeptic.
Yeah.
And so am I. So it's fine.
I actually prefer curmudgeon. But I'll take it. I mean, yeah, obviously he went in there walking or able to walk. But wow, well, this is great branding for him. This is a really good sort of...
Yeah, it couldn't have gone better. It was almost like he knew that fire was about to happen and exactly what he had to do. And he was like, dude, jump. I'm ready.
Are you slandering the dead right now?
I'm just saying they don't know what the cause of the Great Beverly Blaze was.
You're accusing Shakespeare of setting that fire.
Who knows? Maybe.
This man has several...
If you think about it, yeah, but there was he knew that there wasn't going to be anyone in that mill. Wait.
What were the
maybe
the
I'm
then?
Speaking shit.
And maybe you're talking shit. Also, a flour mill doesn't take much to go up.
Exactly. Which very, very convenient that he was there the day before talking about how he'd saved lives from fire. And then just so happens to save a life from a fire, from a very convenient fire source. But then maybe I'm being overly skeptical now.
Well, no, because my skepticism was about whether he was healed by a miracle. Your skepticism is about whether he's an arsonist or not.
Yeah, mine is even worse skepticism than yours.
I don't know. Could have done.
He lives permanently cured anyway. He's okay now.
So what you're proposing here, if I may...
you may.
Sketch this out. So if you're suggesting that he set the barn on fire, are you suggesting that he's pushed all these women into the sea? How is he so conveniently saving everybody?
This is similar to what you brought up earlier about the 3 foot of water. Mm. Really not life endangering at the time that he finds them. But he could have just been like, he could have just been like, look, I'll buy us all a drink at the pub later. You just stand in some water for a bit. Scream for help. I'll come save you.
Madam, you know? Turn around.
Bit of excitement.
And walk towards land.
And like, I don't know, the other reports, as I say, I can't find anything about it.
Well, all right, fuck it. I believe it. The guy made it all up. But that, I think that's what evangelist preachers do, though. Not make stuff up, but they're very bombastic and sort of... So maybe
he might have
elaborated
a few stories.
Wait a minute.
What?
Jeez, I just realized what you're saying. There's no newspaper reports of any of this.
This is what I... Yeah.
He didn't do any of it.
No. Well, I don't know, but... there's no...
He's a fibber.
There are very, very few witnesses to any of these stories.
Yeah,
they just come later.
He didn't do any of them.
I don't want to slander the dead because I feel there is more coming up.
All right, sorry.
Which kind of redeem, but also confirm my doubt in a lot of his tale. But anyway,
all right.
So he's cured. Shakespeare was able to go back to his evangelical touring, much to the delight of audiences around the country. Yeah. But he wasn't about to let the outcome of his last gallant act put him off life-saving.
No, of course not.
Oh, no.
Not while there are barns left to be burned.
Here's just a little taster of what felt like hundreds of headlines I found on Albert Shakespeare. It probably was hundreds, but a lot of those would have been repeated, so I'm going to say dozens.
Yes.
31st of July, 1908, evangelist chases a burglar.
Right.
11th of September, 1908, heroic rescue by Mr. Albert Shakespeare, which continues, finding at a little after 9 o'clock at night that Miss Deverell of 88 Ellesmere Road, Sheffield, had not rejoined the party of friends with whom she had been strolling on the brig, he returned to look for her, and saw her standing on a ledge of rock up to her waist in water, in a breaking sea, and with the tide rapidly rising. A jutting point of rock prevented approach from all ways but by swimming, and though there was no one else on the reef at the time, and though the odds were against him reaching her, he bravely entered the water and managed to swim around, finding the young lady then floating in the surf and apparently drowned. The return journey with his burden was a terrible one, but he won the reef and tried artificial respiration without success. Seeing that medical assistance was an absolute necessity, Mr. Shakespeare tried to bear the lifeless form of the girl to the cliff edge, where a path leads to the top. But after 100 yards struggle over the rocks, he was forced to lay her down, being quite exhausted with his efforts. After a short rest, knowing that some cobles, which I'm presuming here are boats of some sort, were anchored on the filey side of the brig, he covered Miss Deverell with his coat and tried to swim out to one of them, but he was beaten by the rising swell and forced to return. There being nothing else to do, he drew Miss Deverell farther up and climbed the steps over the top of the cliffs, reaching the town in an exhausted condition.
No witnesses to that one, then?
No one till the town.
Right. I'm not sure. There is a very, very sinister aspect to this that I'm not ready to welcome into my life just yet.
Okay, maybe you can bring it in a little later.
All right.
23rd of March 1912, Thomas Rook, a wire brush maker who sells his own wares, was set upon and brutally ill-treated in the Grapes Hotel Filey on Wednesday night. Fighting took place in the street, which was in an uproar for some time. The man was taken by Mr. Albert Shakespeare, a well-known evangelist, to his home, and Dr. Hayworth was called to his aid. Now, Shakespeare would later go on to represent the man in court. And what? As far as I could tell, win. There was this big dispute by a bunch of people against this wire brush maker. Don't know why. They were just arguing. It ended up someone got arrested. And yeah, now he's a lawyer now, by the way. Not an official one.
Wow.
5th of January 1914.
Was he naked for that as well, do we know?
Oh yeah, he was like, I just want a lawyer with a bit more freedom.
Yeah, I've got to strut around in front of this jury, guys. Trousers are an encumbrance to me. Encumbrance? Probably.
It's fine. I back you. So, you're thinking sinisterly, this next one. Maybe.
Right.
Speculating again. 5th of January 1914.
Wait. Don't let me. All right, go.
Staircase on fire. Wife and children lowered from window. Six persons had narrow escapes at a fire at Filey yesterday. In the early hours of the morning, the staircase of Cliff Point House, the residence of Mr. Albert Shakespeare...
Oh, you can't set your own house on fire.
...was found in flames.
Mr.
Shakespeare lowered his wife and two children by blankets from the upper window to the lawn and then leapt out. The Reverend W.H. Holtby, Primitive Methodist minister, who was a guest at the house, also jumped to the ground. Mr. Shakespeare afterwards gallantly returned to the house and rescued his aged father-in-law.
Just addicted to rescuing, isn't he?
Yeah, he just can't get enough of it. And he's like, I'm at home, I'm a bit bored, there's just no one to rescue at this time of night. Oh,
yeah,
there's a fire there.
Do you know what is quite funny about this? Not funny. I would enjoy a superhero movie where it's the superhero doing it all and then going in. That probably already exists.
And
like a Batman.
If he's rigged up like these amazing rescues that he can enact through the nature of the badness that he has created.
Yeah, but then
if that makes sense at all.
Right, so he just sets a flour mill on fire and then splits his liver. Honestly, we can work this into a treatment. I'd see it.
Shakespeare served in the army during World War One. He got another medal for service.
He'd have been 41?
Yeah, I'm fairly certain he would have enlisted because it was quite late. It definitely wasn't the beginning of the war, I don't think.
I can't remember the age. I think it's 18 to 40 were the ages. So he would have enlisted if that's the case. Yeah.
And he was later a member of the Royal National Lifeboat Institute.
That is the place for him to be.
Yeah.
He already is a one-man lifeboat.
Everyone else was like, don't worry, guys, we can go home now.
Yeah, that's why he's so
bad. He's turned up for service. And he accompanied them on many, many rescues in his much later years. There were reports, I think he was about 50, 60, and he was going out in these boats to go and help. He also apparently put a quarter of his income towards charitable causes throughout his life, throughout his career.
I feel bad now.
And he is reported to have saved over 40 lives over his lifetime. Some speculate more than 40. Yeah, I speculate a lot less. He continued to preach until his death in 1949 at the age of 76.
Wow.
But we've been speculating all through this. And as I was researching this, I just thought it's so weird that there are no earlier reports. And
you would think once a man is awarded like 7 medals from the Humane Society,
I looked for those as well, but...
But, like, the episode that we did a while ago on Jane Cakebread, who was arrested, like, 300 times.
Yeah.
People didn't start reporting on her being arrested until it was, like, the 100th time. Because it's, you know, it was... you would think one or two rescues, you're like, oh, that's weird. But then a local paper's going to pick up and say, God, this guy's rescued, like, 22 people.
Yeah. And I was like, well...
Just has to.
I mean, there's always the chance that it's just that the you don't have the paper or you don't have the right dates or something like that, but... We've got fairly, the BNA has fairly good coverage for, I mean, Hull and the surrounding area for the dates that he was there. And I was like, there's like 30. What are the chances of like 30 not having been at all reported on?
And we have the Hull Daily Mail, which is one of the best newspapers in the archive.
Yeah, where I got a lot of this information from, from the slightly later dates. But with my suspicion, I had a look in a few record sets, and I found his medal for gallantry and his service during World War One.
Right.
And then I found item 80451053214962 held by the National Archives in Kew. Description: Albert Medal, various applications for awards for bravery regarding Albert Shakespeare, ex-wrestler and local evangelist of Yorkshire. Includes reports, newspaper extracts, testimonials and police investigations into incidents between January 1907 and January 1914, culminating in a fire at his own house in Filey, with references to previous claims prior to 1907 when he had supposedly saved 35 lives from drowning and fire. Applications rejected as not substantiated. Described by the chief constable of East Riding as a systematic self-advertiser.
Oh, ho, ho. And puncher. He was a puncher.
Yeah.
So that's basically the policeman saying, the policeman, that's, I just reduced his job to that. the chief police officer, whatever he is, saying that he's a known bullshitter.
Yeah. It's multiple applications that have been rejected.
It's kind of like, you know, when something happens and ISIS claims it. And you're like, oh, you didn't do anything.
Yeah.
That was nothing to do with you. It kind of sounds like that.
You just related Albert Shakespeare to an extremist.
The ISIS Rocky Christ. Yeah, ISIS Rocky Christ.
ISIS Rocky Christ. Well, there we go. That's a headline that's sure to catch
a
few eyes.
Let's not. For SEO purposes, let's avoid using the word ISIS in any of our episodes.
We're shut down, guys. I'm sorry. Happy 2018. We won't see you next year.
Yeah. So we didn't... I am unsatisfied.
I will use the official terminology. The story is not substantiated. He at least saved that one guy's life.
He saved eight that we know of. Although I don't know what the entry requirements are for a Royal Humane Society medal. He could have faked all that.
Maybe we should look into that. Maybe we can get one.
Maybe we can get one.
Just not shoving people into the lake.
we just slandered the dead for 52 minutes.
I saved 30 people by not shoving them into the canal on the walk to work.
Yeah.
There we go.
I saw somebody put their bare feet up on an aeroplane and I didn't do anything, so I saved that life. Right, okay. Well, here's what I think.
Shoot.
I don't believe any of it. Ha-ha!
You don't believe an evangelist preacher?
I'm punching your story in its face. Like ISIS Rocky Christ would. I need to stop saying ISIS Rocky Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Well, that was fun. That was a rollicking good ride. Well, that's the story of Albert Shakespeare, the Hull shitter. Hey? He's from Hull? Ah.
Hull shitter.
The Hull shitter. Okay, so... Another thing that we like to do is look through letters and poems from old newspapers. Letters because they give an insight into how petty people have always been. They're kind of like the YouTube comments of newspapers. And poems because they're fun. And they don't appear so much in newspapers anymore, but they used to be a big deal. And some of them aren't very good. So I think I'm going to go with my poem first, which is from the Evening Sentinel from Santa Cruz, California, from the 12th of July, 1907, which was a Friday.
Oh. I think Friday might be my favourite day of the week.
I think it's a good one. It's a good one. sorry, I'm just reading a death notice right next to this poem. That's jolly. So they had a poetry competition. You had to write a poem about Santa Cruz. And some of them are disappointingly really, really good. And that wasn't what I wanted. Now that we've slandered the dead, I wanted to insult the poetical talent of strangers. So this is the 56th entry that they printed. So this went on for a while.
56? How many entries did they get?
Loads. You're joking. Santa Cruz, they call it the poetic coast.
I've heard that.
So it's called Beautiful Santa Cruz. Oh, say, by the way, I am going on the bay to beautiful Santa Cruz. That is the place to drive away the blues. You can go on the beach and dig in the sand and hear the sweet music of the band. It is surely fine when the tide is low, and another thing, there's no undertow. Which is good.
That's good. Albert Shakespeare is not interested at this point.
Wouldn't be needed. If you only come once, you will want to stay at this beautiful city on Monterey Bay. Didn't even try. It matters not wherever you may roam, but make Santa Cruz your home. If you will subscribe for the Sentinel, you will know all the news about the beautiful beach of Santa Cruz. So yeah, they've complimented the newspaper to get printed like you used to do when you were younger.
Yeah. I mean, there's good money to be made in that, to be fair.
Yeah, there is. No, there isn't. Are you the reigning bush poetry king of Tasmania? There's loads here, though. Like, one of them starts, "In this poetry composition, Mr. Editor, I pity you. To satisfy all these poets, whatever will you do? To choose four out of all this lot, oh my, won't it be a tangle? So you'd better take my advice and say, here, darn you, scramble." What? Okay.
What?
So that's my
poem. That's not going to win. No. What are they entering that for?
I mean, that's number 59 as well, Alec. So you beat out the beautiful Santa Cruz one that we just did. That gives information about how the sea works. And then I didn't find a letter. I found something quite remarkable. So one of my favourite things about old newspapers is the adverts for medication.
Oh, yeah. Because those are great.
Largely, it comes before any advertising regulations. So you could say that, you know, these things cured everything, basically. One pill would cure rheumatism and catarrh, you know.
Yeah.
And this, I found a whole page. I'm not going to read all of them. This is from the Burlington Weekly Hawkeye from Burlington, Iowa, the 23rd of September, 1880. This guy, Dr. Clark Johnson, took out a full-page ad for testimonials.
Dr. Clark, real Dr. Johnson.
He calls himself a doctor.
Of 123 Real Street.
There's a church near here that really makes me laugh, where the reverend is called Guy Pope. And it's just like, it's like an escaped criminal.
Yeah.
And someone asked, he was just dressed as a priest, and someone asked his name, and he was like, Guy Pope. Marcus Jesus. Jesus again. So this is a full-page ad for his Indian blood syrup and blood purifier. And it actually, and this is a liberty, it says, "Caution to druggists, beware of counterfeit medicines." Ah, come on. But these are all letters to him that he's printed as testimonials. And they just, this is one medication.
Okay.
There was one really disgusting one, actually, that I, that's the one. This one just says, "Would not be without it. Dear Dr. Clark Johnson, dear sir, I have used your excellent Indian blood syrup and I think it is the best medicine for all diseases, especially worms," which is disgusting.
Oh.
"Liver complaint. I have used your excellent Indian blood syrup for liver complaint of 2 years standing and it effectually cured me after numerous doctors failed." So what else? Dyspepsia. Indigestion. "Dear sir, I have used your Indian blood syrup in my family and you've never known it to fail in giving the desired relief. It is a great regulator of the stomach and purifier of the blood." It means nothing.
Does it list any ingredients?
Oh, God, no. No. Okay. I mean, this one is just Indian blood syrup and blood purifier.
So blood.
Yeah.
Ingredient one, blood. Ingredient two, syrup.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. 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 Spit. "Dear sir, this is just pain in the side." Oh, no, hang on. "I was sorely afflicted with pains in my side."
Oh, no,
breast.
Hang on, that's my wife. Sorry.
Only 50% of yesterday's chip paper endorses that joke.
I was thinking,
it's not me,
earlier when you were like, "I used this on all my family and never had a problem." And I was like, in achieving what? But...
Yeah, no, exactly. Kill them? I don't know. "Pains in my side, breast, and under my shoulders, was unable to work and could not rest at night. I tried many medicines but failed to find anything to relieve me until I used your Indian blood syrup." That's just a pain in the side. That's not a medical condition.
That's a stitch.
A stitch. This one's sick headache, dyspepsia, pain in my side. Another one. This one's pain in the back.
Pain in the neck.
Cure. Oh my God. Dear sir, your great Indian blood syrup is the best medicine I've ever used for heart disease.
What?
It cured heart disease.
The funny thing about this is some advertisers sitting at their desk just coming up with these random characters.
Well, actually, yes, I agree. Because there's one here that's just for general debility. Kidney disease. Yeah, kidney disease, that's done. Dyspepsia comes up again. Liver complaint and dyspepsia.
Oh, Shakespeare.
The best thing, though, I think the most remarkable thing, and this is actually quite cool, is that it says, parties desirous of addressing any of the above named persons to satisfy themselves of the genuineness of these testimonials will be kind enough to send a stamp to them for a reply. There are no addresses.
That's quite clever.
Yeah, there's just no addresses, so you can't do it. Best medicine ever used.
I miss the days when there was just one cure-all for everything.
I miss the days when people would say they had things like scrofula. My little boy, 4 years old, had scrofula, and a short trial of your Indian blood relieved him effectively.
What is scrofula?
Sores. Sores. Ooh.
You know what's really sad is someone reading that paper actually had sores and bought that oil in, or that syrup.
In good faith.
Good faith.
Yeah. It's funny, actually, because it's very similar to what Albert Shakespeare was doing, really.
Yeah.
Just bullshitting and getting away with it. So, you know, I just thought they were quite fun. The unbridled nonsense you could get away with masquerading as healthcare.
That would have been great. I would have loved to have worked as a copywriter in those days.
Yeah,
no
yeah,
rules.
Actually. Really put some razzmatazz on your scrofula. God, that's one of the most disgusting things I think I've ever seen. So, yeah, okay. Well, that's all I brought to this podcast this week.
That's all I've got.
Thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in. We really do appreciate the support.
Thank you.
If you do have 5 minutes, we would very much appreciate it if you visited your podcast provider and just left us a little rate and review. It really, really helps us with climbing up the charts.
And while you're online, you can also find us at Paper Podcast if you want to see any pictures of stripping pickers on both Facebook and Twitter.
Playing us out, as always, is
Al Jolson and Sophie Tucker,
yes.
We made a gap.
Saying the wrong name for a year.
Someone, probably me. I put my hands
I'm
up.
I'm not pointing fingers in any directions.
But it is in fact Sophie Tucker.
They'll be playing out with the International Rag with thanks to the Free Music Archive.
All of the archives and other sources that we've used for the researching of this podcast can be found in the episode description.
We will be back in a couple of weeks with more from the historical newspapers. Thank you very much for tuning in.
Bye. The International Rag.